Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. The Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online, sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory with great warranties. Fabulous pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. They go over every vehicle. Terrific service department. That backs it up every step of the way. It's Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online. SunburyMotors.com. Getting a lot of suit not in the Hall of Fame reaction. All of it backing you and I up.
He's in the Hall of Fame of life, though. Did I leave you silenced?
Confused. I mean, just because his personal charity is called the Human Fund, I'm not, you know, I get a little worried about that.
It's because they wouldn't let him call it the Her Fund.
Oh. Hey, that's great. We're going to give money to her. Like, not realizing it's him. Uh-oh. Problem. All right. Joey Porter Jr., Jair Brown, both on the Pro Football Writers Association All-Rookie Team. That's great. That's great. So let's talk about always a favorite topic, and that is the use of analytics. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers draw to within 8, 31-23. And decide they want to go for 2 points with the idea they're going to make it 31-25, thus with a touchdown and an extra point, they can win the game. Or by missing, now you're forced to get a touchdown and a two-point conversion to force overtime. When that happened, what did you think of the decision to go for two there?
It's one of those things that I can't say I've read up much on it, but it seems like that's the prevailing wisdom now, is that's when you're supposed to go for two. I understand it. I think sometimes they don't think about the flow of the game at that point. You know, I think sometimes that there's other things involved in this that you don't always take the numbers aren't the be all end all. There's other parts of it, and sometimes I think people think the numbers end up being the be end all of it.
Yeah, this is what. First of all, the data is just cold data. Oh, you 64%, 54%, whatever. Well, 54% means 46% you're going to miss. Okay. So you're sitting there, and one thing it doesn't take into account. You know how some teams, they score and it's easy? And the other teams that score, you know, you can just tell. One team is scoring easier and the other team is just fighting. Get every inch out there. And I kind of felt like Tampa Bay was fighting most of the day trying to get every inch out there. I'd have taken the one at that point, then given my team the option at the end to maybe go for two. I'd have taken the one only because of how hard they had to fight just to get that. Because by not making it, that was a deflating moment when they didn't make it. For a team that had to fight its way back, and had to fight really for every yard. And remember, I talked about the Chiefs. The key to their win over Buffalo was they didn't have any drop passes, which is a difference from how they played most of the season. Mike Evans was had some drops in this game. Again, he's another guy that's fought the ball a lot this season. And, you know, I kind of looked at that, thought, okay, what are your options at that point? You know, you're not a tush-push team. You're going to have to put the ball up. So, I mean, it's the analytics part never takes into account the flow and how the game is being played. They can't, right? Just because they say go for it, you have to have two eyes and say, you know what, let's just take the extra point right now because, right, we'll save that decision for later because we've had to fight hard just to get to here. Okay? How have I performed in the red zone today? For example, the Bills, for example, I'm trying to think, were any of the Bills' touchdowns a red zone score?
Yeah, I think one of them was a short Josh Allen run.
Yeah, short Josh Allen run. So they got one. The other two were outside the red zone. But yeah. So I mean that you got to take into account things like that. You know, what's my best 2-point play? How much confidence do I have in it? Because analytics doesn't take in how the game is being played and doesn't take into the feel for the game. And analytics people hate, and I do mean hate, when you bring up feel for the game. They hate that. Oh, you can't. Oh, I've got data. Yeah, that's right. Well, do you know how the game's played? No? Didn't think so. Okay. All right. Back to the lab. Yeah. The part about the analytics individuals, I respect all the data they put out, all of it. Doesn't mean you have to use all of it. I mean, believe me, I've got access to data left and right. I was talking the other day about, Penn State basketball, because we have Ken Pom, if I can, on the show how many times. And we're talking about, you know, possessions per game. We were talking about, you know, where teams are, you know, where their offensive efficiency happens to be. Like, they were playing Wisconsin, and Wisconsin's offensive efficiency coming into the Penn State game was sixth. And Penn State threw them completely off their game by forcing turnovers and so forth and wrecked their efficiency for a team that is normally very efficient. But, you know, so, yeah, data, I'm all for, give me all the data you want. But at some point, I've got to call the game. At some point, I've got to coach the game. At some point, you know, I've got to make decisions in the game. Those are all things that you have to do. And if somebody doesn't agree with analytics, they get criticized. Well, I'm sorry, this is not a bully pulpit system here, right? Guess what? You did a great job. I elected not to use it. My decision. Right? If it were your decision, you'd have gone for it. But guess what? You're sitting there and I'm standing here. I'm the one that's going to get criticized either way. And that's the part about the analytics community that bothers me, is that if you don't do what they say, they bully you. Like, well, now, take somebody like me. I could give a damn. Right? Yeah. I use stats all the time. I go for trends all the time. It's not just, I'll give you an example. You got to do your own research. Say a guy is an 80% free throw shooter. Okay? But what if the deep dive, as you're preparing for the game, and you're going through box score by box score about somebody, and you notice he's 3 for his last 8 at the free throw line, but he's 80%. And again, these are both analytics, by the way. Those are analytics. Stats are analytics. He's an 80% free throw shooter. He's going to hit 8 out of 10. Except he's 3 of his last 8. Guess what? He'd be the guy I'd foul. And I'll give you an example. Penn State's playing Purdue in the Big Ten Championship game last spring in Chicago. Lawyer, the guard. Good shooter, right? Phenomenal free throw percentage. He was up like 85%, some number like that. But Todd, in going through the research for the game, I look at it and I see he's 3 for his last 9 at the free throw line. So I stated on the broadcast, I said, Dick, Lawyer touches the ball, I said, you need to foul him. Right? Now, if you're looking at base numbers and you see 85% and 83% in Big Ten games, am I supposed to foul him?
Doesn't sound like it was a good idea.
No, except he's 3 for his last 9. And guess what? They fouled him. And guess what he did? He made 1 out of 2. Whoops. See, there's more to it than just the pure cold number. Analytics would tell you you don't foul that guy, correct? Okay, deeper dive tells me I do foul that guy. Right? Now, if you take time and actually do research on numbers and do it yourself, get your hands dirty and do it yourself, you can give the audience a better perspective on why you would do that. Right? Smith's a really good free throw shooter. Edie's okay. Edie, for a big man, is actually good. But you're not going to expect him to touch it late game. Lawyer's one of the two guards. You expect him to touch the ball late game, right? Well, that's I said in the broadcast, I said, you foul him. Right? And that, you know, because you have to just, in other words, they do a great job of giving you a lot of numbers, analytics people do, but you got to do your own research too that tells you, you know, what to do in a certain situation, right? And that's an example right there, right? The base analytic is he's an 85% free throw shooter, 83% in the Big Ten. My deep dive was he was 3 for his last 9. Like, not confident. Oh, you can't do that. No, the numbers say, hey, just slow down the numbers. I've done this a long time. I can figure out numbers too. All right? But they get insulted if you do that. The analytics people get very insulted. It's very much a bully industry where other elements of thought are not allowed. So if you kick the extra point there, oh, you should have gone for 2. It's a bully industry. Now, Todd Bowles decided to go for 2. He didn't get it. Okay. Well, that's fine. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, I know what he's trying to think here. But, you know, I'm on the road. I score a touchdown now. I can win the game with an extra point and really ratchet up the game pressure on Detroit. Well, they didn't get it. Now the pressure is actually back all on you. I mean, you have one possession, but you got to get 2 scores. That's one of the, again, in terms of terminology, all right? You have to use the right sports terminology as often as possible. You cannot call it, right, a one-score game when it's 31-23. It is not a one-score game. It is a one-possession game, right? Because I've got to get 2 scores on the one possession. I don't get the, you know, it's not like, hey, great, you know, it's a one-score game. Well, if I get 1 score, I'm still down 2 points. I got to score again.
I think the numbers help, you know, predictively and you know, tendencies and things like that. I do think I agree with you that they're kind of over-relied in games and that as the fact that they are, you know, the be-all, end-all that you have to go for 2 in that situation, that there's no other possible answer in that situation.
Well, I mean, way back. Let's go back to 1984. To this day, I still respect that Tom Osborne, who could have kicked an extra point for a tie and won the national championship, went for 2 to win it. Okay. Right? You went for 2. You went to win the game. Great. Okay. And I think, you know, I have no problem with those decisions. Right? All you do is lay out the pros and cons of each part of the decision. You don't have to stand there and back it up or rip it or whatever. You sit there and say, okay, here are his 2 options here. You can kick the extra point, which gives them the option at the end of if Tampa scores, they can either force overtime or they can go for two there. Or by going for two now, he wants to put the game pressure on Detroit because now I can now win it with a touchdown and an extra point. Right? That's all you do is tell everybody what it is. All right. So. But you can't sit there and tippy-toe around it. Like, John Smoltz gets ripped all the time because he talks about how the game should be played. Right? And the analytics people can't stand him for it because he's not going to sit there. And a lot of this stuff now is okay, because I announce baseball as well. Okay? And when you're announcing baseball, when I was a young broadcaster, well, don't make a joke. It used to be a young broadcaster. Come on.
They only had three bases.
Right? Yes, they only had three bases. The basket was 8 feet high. And they did not wear face masks. When I was a young broadcaster, I would throw a lot into, you know, stats here, all the time. And Todd, one of the reasons I did it was, of course, I wanted to do my homework. You know, you always want to make sure. In fact, I was working on Penn State, Minnesota this morning. But I also was trying to impress people that I knew what I was talking about. You know, I'll freely admit that. You know, you wanted to, hey, you know, boy, this guy knows all this stuff and all these stats and the whole thing. Yeah, I mean, because I'm young, I'm trying to move up in the profession. And then as time goes, you realize that in the broadcast that you use the stat that fits the situation. Right? And it's about the game, the time, the score, things like that. And you use the stat that fits the situation. That's just maturing in the business. Same thing in baseball. I know that baseball does lack for action. There's more action this year since they put the pitch clock in. Right? But I always felt that the most important job for me was to not sit there and tell you he is 8 for 12 in the season on Tuesdays and night games. Instead, trying to tell you that, hey, look, they got a runner on first. He's got a good lead, right? You got one out. Outfield swung over a couple steps toward right against him. Here's the 1-0 pitch, right? That's in the dirt. Runner takes off, gets second. Right now, I got a runner in scoring position with one out. Where you're just describing the action so people see what's going on with the action of it. Now, if there's a stat that comes into play that's really important, for example, Mike leads the team in sacrifice bunts with 7 this season. All right, they might bunt here, right? Something as simple as, hey, look, the golden opportunity. Let's see how quickly they get him in motion. He's 21-23 in stolen bases this season. Those are stats as well, right? And those are things that I think you're trying to tell the audience to tip them off as, okay, this is an exciting moment here. He might go, right? And if they get him, it's a big win for the defense. If they don't get him, hey, the offense is cooking, and now they've got an opportunity to bring a guy with some speed in. Right? So the advice I give all the time is, even in baseball, where numbers, right? And you have to give numbers that people know. And this, I did talk to the class yesterday about this. I said, look, remember who you're broadcasting to. You are not broadcasting to your colleagues. You're not broadcasting to the analytics community. You are broadcasting to fans. So what do they understand? What can you do to help them to understand? Telling a fan base, I'll give you an example. Telling a fan base, he has, and I don't really, you know, has a 12.3 WAR. Okay. Does anybody know what that means? What does that mean? I mean, you're an average fan. What does that mean to you?
I was going to say I know what it means, but I've been reading those books for 25 years.
Yeah. Right? But to the average fan, what does it mean?
Vietnam or World War II, probably.
Right. No, but I mean, it's like, I mean, for goodness sakes, I mean, you got to be a total idiot to sit there and say, hey, look, if Mike Trout is out of the lineup, the guy replacing him isn't as good. I think I got it. Okay? I don't think you have to be a Phi Beta Kappa with a degree from MIT to understand that. Okay? At Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, time now for Tuesdays with Neil. Sir, welcome back. Always a pleasure.
Pleasure's mine, as always. Great to be here.
Okay, so I'm watching Kansas City Buffalo on Sunday night, and something that I was really taken aback that the CBS broadcast did not bring up. Because, you know, you're trying to watch a game. I really don't really care what the next-gen stats happen to be. But what did the Kansas City Chiefs do that was so remarkable offensively on Sunday night that they hadn't done consistently this season? They caught the ball, Neil. They didn't have a single drop in the game. When they don't have drops, how good can that offense be?
It's funny you say that. I was talking with a few people earlier about it. We see such a different Chiefs team, and understandably so. They are kind of forced to make Mahomes play his absolute best in every game that they're going to win, and a large part of that is because they don't have the receivers. I mean, yes, Travis Kelce is the first ballot Hall of Famer. He'll catch the ball, but he's not the player he used to be. In fact, I don't think he's the player that he was in Week One. We've seen him drop off quite a bit. I think he's playing more hurt than what people are publicly saying. But they don't have any explosion down the field. They haven't set that up particularly well. But Mahomes has been consistent in what he's doing, except for the drops. And without those, you see a balanced offense that can make plays, that can possess the ball, and you know they're very difficult to stop. They're not playing the high flying style that we've kind of come accustomed to with them, particularly seeing them go through these, you know, typical late January runs to the Super Bowl. But they are an efficient offense. They are a very difficult offense to defend, and they're getting enough from everywhere else that they need. But Mahomes obviously is the straw that stirs the drink. But they're not doing it through big plays. The fact that they are finding consistent success speaks to what they do have at among their receiver positions, not named Travis Kelce, actually holding on to the ball. Right. And in a lot of ways, I mean, you know, this was the subject we were talking about. I really think they would have liked Juju Smith-Schuster on that team this year. Just the role that he played for them last year,
yep.
What he set everybody else up to do, they were a better offensive team last year than they were this season. And regardless of how things end with Kansas City this year, you can almost guarantee they're going to be shopping pretty aggressively for a deep threat receiver this offseason.
Yeah, look, I mean, because financially they moved Tyreek Hill. I mean, that's all about money. It's like Robbie Gould's not kicking for the San Francisco 49ers. It's about money. So that's why they moved Hill out of there. But, you know, Watson had drops in the Philadelphia game. Kelce has been up and down with drops this year. You bring up Kadarius Toney, certain things that are obvious and don't need to be talked about. But that to me was the whole thing. Like they had in this game, I do not think they had a drop, and suddenly they look like a world-beating offense.
Yeah, they're able to do the things that they've set up to do, and not to bring up Toney too often. But Lord, he had a rough year. You think of a drop, down distance, whatever you want to call it. They gained no yards, but it's the yards that they didn't get. And if it's a third down catch that would have been a first down, that's a possession you just gave away. That's three more downs. That's at least, probably a minute and a half off the clock. That's better field position. When you have a team that's dropping the ball three times a game, they're really sacrificing a lot. And when you have such a well-designed and typically well-executed offense, you're taking a lot off of them. And on top of that, it's not a bad defense, but it's not a great one either. You don't want to have to rely on them to hold on down seven late in the game. You know, they're able to close things out if you can get them a lead in order to, you know, kind of pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. But by and large, the drops have killed them all season. And drops, statistically, you don't want to say they're an anomaly per se, but they shouldn't happen as often as they have with Kansas City. That's a real problem. One that just, you know, typically does not look the way that it does. You can get bricks for a game and then, you know, come back and grab everything the next week. But the Chiefs consistently have had people dropping the ball, and that's killed them. You know, I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago. I don't think Mahomes, his mentality, his demeanor, which has gotten a lot more angry, a lot more aggressive this season than we've seen him in the past, I don't think he wants to specifically call out his teammates. Instead, he's taking it out on the officials. But right. That's got to frustrate you after a while, because it's every single week. And right. You're right. I agree with you. Against Buffalo, they didn't have those. It didn't happen. They were able to hang on and beat a good, well-playing defensive team through the fact that they were able to execute and extend drives a lot more than they have in the past this season.
I mean, no question. So now let me ask you about Detroit-Tampa Bay. What did you think of the Ty Bowles decision at 31-23 to go for two instead of one? And we all know what analytics says. That's fine. They can bully the world. Just it's our opinion.
I don't think he's at fault either way. I can see why you would want to do it, but without knowing...
Yep.
Really, what this always comes down to is not statistics themselves. They're going to tell you what the probability is. Now, there are, you know, companies that say try to make a profit that want to slant it as versus bad. That's not what the statistics are telling you. They're giving you a percentage chance based on everything else that's happened. A good coach and a good manager is reviewing probability and seeing if that is enough to, when weighed against what they would have planned, what team they're going against, with the personnel they have at that moment. Because the reality is that the one thing that statistics do not take into account is that actual moment. Play has not happened. It can't track and you know, make sense out of that moment. It's just telling you what happened in the past. So you weigh that versus what you have in front of you, given, you know, the outcome of the game, the amount of time that's left, what the score would be if we don't get it, the percentages say this. That's enough for me to say, you know what, we've got this special package, we worked on this, we haven't shown it all season, they haven't seen it, we feel good about it, we're going to go for it. And you're doing all of that in literally 8 seconds. Ever take that into account either. You don't have the time to sit and discuss it in a committee.
That's right.
You get a number, you have to make a decision, you have to go. I don't fault coaches for those kinds of things, unless it's the black and white. You have to in this case. You know, that's the only sensible thing to do. And that's the difference between one possession and two, if you get it versus don't get it and there's like a minute left in the game. You obviously have to do that. In Bowles' case, I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with it. I would want to hear from him why they wouldn't have. What was the pregame discussion over these kinds of things? Did they feel they had any type of advantage or disadvantage when it comes to their offense in goal line play? Would they have felt a different situation? Would they have tried it? Would he go back and think about it again? Those types of things are really more rooted in the heat of the moment as opposed to the 10,000-foot level statistical overview, which is not a replacement for a coach. You can't just do that. It depends on the situation that you're in, what you're up against, and what you feel you have working for you.
And another, here's one for you. Yeah, you're going through an entire day. How have you done in the red zone in this game? Have you had to fight your guts out in the red zone all day? Right? You know, have you actually been scoring actually on big plays? Where you're like, geez, we've had to fight our guts out in the red zone all day. Let's just take the point for now. We'll figure the other stuff out later. Or, hey, we've been great in the red zone today, and I love, because, you know, they've worked on two-point plays all week. I love our two-point package here. Let's go for it. All those things have to be taken into account when you're making a decision like that, and it just can't be done on cold data.
Yeah, just if you're getting the numbers themselves, and we're sitting around, we've talked about it for literally 10 times the amount of time that Todd Bowles had to make that decision.
That's right.
You make that decision before the game. Yep. And it might be, as a head coach, it might be in your mind to make a gut call moment, but probably going with what you have prepared to go for. And that is going to be the result of film review, knowing your personnel, what you would do, what you have worked on, what you would need to work on. And on top of that, oftentimes, I mean, ask any play caller. You know, I bet Bill O'Brien would say this. You run stuff early in a game to see how another team moves.
Right.
Like today. They might not be the same as on film. Something might have happened that you didn't know about. Todd Bowles could have picked up something that said, you know what, this guy isn't moving all that well. He's a key to this play, this package, whatever we're going to do. I don't like it. We're not going to do it. Not going to risk it. I don't care what the percentage says. Bottom line is we can get a 0.96% chance of that, and we're going to need at least 1 point out of this. Otherwise,
right,
we're in real trouble. It's a conservative play. I get that, but sometimes that is the right move. You need to do that, and it's based on things that Joe Sweatsock with a calculator doesn't understand in the heat of the moment. And I am not trying to denounce advanced analytics. They absolutely
right.
have their purpose, but they are there to help you make a decision. They are not there to make the decision for you, especially if you're talking like 53%. That's not significant, you know. Knowing, though, what the probability would be helps you, along with everything else that you have watched, everything your coaches are telling you, what your players are telling you, your own experience and insight to the game. You put all those things together to make the decision. It's not any one yeah. thing. It's certainly not, you know, a game of poker where you get all day to sit and analyze the odds and kind of, you know, go with what is going to favor you the best in that moment. You need it's a fluid dynamic. It's not static at all. Guys have to move. What happens if they jump offside or they false start? What happens if they report ineligible? You know, things like that come into play. That's a part of the dynamic of the decision. And you have to have all that stuff ironed out ahead of time. And I don't know whether they have a two-point play or not that they want to run. They might not at all.
Then there's the Lamar Jackson story. He'll dominate the weekend. Phenomenal talent. Great runner. Very good thrower. Is he the kind of guy that, in evaluating, you can be realistic about? I know you can. I can. But in being realistic about how he plays, do you get criticized for being realistic about it?
You do. Big fan of Lamar Jackson for a long time.
Yep.
He's an incredibly physically talented player. Is what coaches would say, though. Loose thrower. His mechanics come loose.
Right.
Something, you know, I don't know what it's like to live in the body of a quick twitch god like Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
I think to an extent, sometimes moving so fast his body isn't catching up, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
He is such an explosive athlete. It's hard to keep all that together, and he's constantly throwing on the move. And sometimes his mechanics get messed up. That said, he throws a gorgeous deep pass.
Yeah, he does.
Not the most accurate quarterback in the NFL, but that doesn't mean he's not accurate. There just are better. And overall, I would say that if we are comparing him at the absolute top echelon of the game, and these are the criticisms we're having, he must be pretty good.
Yeah, he is.
Probably
really.
Why he's about to win his second MVP, you know.
Yep.
Exactly. He's putting things together in the right way, and the way that this lines up now, I thought I would have a better chance of beating Baltimore than Kansas City. Well, I'm not a better, as you know, and it's usually because I'm wrong, but take this with a grain of salt. I think Baltimore wins their next two games 80-6. I don't think anybody left is going to compete with them at all. So Jackson's going to end up being, you know, an all-time legendary player after just six seasons in the league.
Yeah.
And we're still going to criticize little things, you know. Like, I don't really know what you want. The guy is offense-defined today, and he's a great player. And Baltimore, like I said, whatever contract he gets, Baltimore's getting him for a bargain. For as explosive as he is, for as difficult as it's going to be to defend him, We see that every single game because you can't really plan for it. You know, the closest I've seen probably is Tennessee in the playoffs, but they fixed all of that. They have the ability to go over the top. And not everything for the Ravens is, you know, centered on the middle of the field or running, which is what Tennessee did. They loaded up in the middle and then just kind of flushed him to the sideline, made him release the ball into to bad windows. He's overcome that. He's a more versatile player now. He's a better passer, and you know that should be the case. You know, in his third year in the league versus his sixth, he's a much better player now than he was, and he's going to continue to have that success as long as he's got his legs, and that's not going to last forever. But he's going to have a pretty remarkable career in whatever time he's got.
Yeah, well, I'll say this: you can tell he's worked hard on his game. He's put in a lot of off-season work. The best ones are the ones that put in a lot of off-season work. You can tell he's put in a lot of off-season work. It's showing along the way.
The funny thing is with that, though, everyone is I heard Ryan Clark say this, just absolutely bashing Brock Purdy, the thing that Brock Purdy is. Brock Purdy is a second-year quarterback who was taken with the last pick of the draft.
Yeah.
Because he didn't hold up his MVP pace, all of a sudden he's a terrible player. Like, could you give these guys a little bit of time to grow? I mean, come on. You really can't have lesser successful starting quarterback profile than Brock Purdy. You just can't. And Lamar, who has taken 800 picks ahead of Purdy in a different draft, but much higher, much bigger investment, he needed some time to grow as a passer. He was like 21 years old when he was drafted.
Right.
He barely threw. You know, they need time. Let them build. Let them grow. You're going to see good things from talented players who have shown that at the NFL level. They're just not going to be dominant every single game. And this is what you get when really what we're looking at is a league that has not long enough of a memory, just statistical overview of looking at the 80s into the 90s, then starting with Brady and Manning. That ends, and you've got Patrick Mahomes. Aaron Rodgers is intermixed in that. Yeah. These are legends. This is not the normal player at all. And Lamar Jackson is making himself a legend in a very short amount of time. Yeah. It's just we've talked about him as much as we have because of the things that he's doing. And some people choose to look at the non-perfect parts of his game. You know, I'll just say this. John Harbaugh is okay with it. I think the Ravens are okay with it.
Well, the non-perfect parts of the game. Tom Brady and Peyton Manning were brilliant within the 3 to 4 foot circle. But if you flushed them out of it, that's where they struggled making plays. Okay? They're two of the greatest of all times. Well, guess what? They had a flaw in their game, too. If you rush them straight up the middle in their face, they struggled a little bit more. Why? They're human.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, you know, it's simple. I mean, everybody always says all you have to do with Brady is get pressure on him. Okay, well, you know, he gets around that by getting rid of the ball in like a second. You know, it's hard to pressure him. That's why he's good. Lamar has the ability to escape and make plays down the field. Yep. That's what makes him good. Just as simple as, you know, well, he's not going to do anything if you just sack him. Like, okay, yeah, you're right. Can you do that, though? So he's the MVP of the league because he doesn't take those plays. He knows how to get out of it. In that regard, it's not really any different than Brady. They're both generating offense one way or another, and they're polar opposite players. You know, that's what greatness is. They're continuing to make their offense successful. Whatever it is that they need to do, they do.
Well, and for Brock Purdy, my analysis on him has been simple. I feel like as a second-year player, he'll play 3 games in a row like a first-round pick, and then he plays a game, the fourth game, like a seventh-round pick. So he doesn't have the consistency there yet because he's only started, I don't know, 20-something games in his career.
Yeah, I mean, he got knocked out early in the NFC Championship game last year. And the whole offseason, we're talking about Trey Lance.
Yep.
From him. You remember that? It was me saying that. Purdy, where he is now, the fact that a national pundit needs to call out the fact that he's no longer a top 5 quarterback in the league just makes me laugh. It's like, wow. Okay, well, he's playing with house money here, all right? This could end up being the most valuable draft pick in the last decade. The trajectory that he's on. And he's only going to improve. He just played the full season for the first time. You know, he's got, what, 27 starts, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
It's remarkable where he's going. But, yeah, you know, at the same time, he's not like a prototypical prospect. That's why he was the last pick of the draft. His hands aren't big enough and strong enough to hold on to a soaking wet NFL ball in a torrential downpour. So he plays poorly. Like, that's a flaw. That's one of the things you kind of have to work around or come to accept when your starting quarterback was taken 86th overall or whatever it is.
Or build a dome. All right, so, but remember, Neil and I just talk about how things are going, right? We don't do hot takes. And the industry has become hot takes. He's not a top five quarterback. Okay, that's a hot take. Yeah, so thanks for not doing hot takes and just talking football. Appreciate you so much, my good friend.
Love talking football. I'm definitely not a hot take guy, but I don't even care what a top five quarterback is. I know that the MVP of the league is probably going to win the Super Bowl, and it seems balanced to me. That's right. That's what football really is.
You got it. Neil, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
We will wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.